From NPR News, this is live special coverage of the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. I'm Audie Cornish. Surprise, when it happens to a government, is likely to be a complicated, diffuse, bureaucratic thing. It includes neglect of responsibility, but also responsibility so poorly defined or so ambiguously delegated that action gets lost. Now, those words were written 50 years ago by a Nobel Prize-winning economist and historian, Thomas Schelling, in a book about the attack on Pearl Harbor. But our next guest quotes them in the context of the September 11th attacks and the effect on our national security system. Philip Zelikow, he served as executive director of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks Upon the United States, more commonly known as the 9/11 Commission, and he helped compile the original 9/11 report. Now he's written an update on the commission's recommendations. We spoke with Mr. Zelikow this past week from New York, and he told us how the government has followed through on some of the commission's key recommendations.
Our most important institutional recommendation was to create a National Counterterrorism Center, or an NCTC, that would bridge the domestic foreign divide, that would pool a lot of the information available, and make sure that somebody was working on the key problems. That actually is a substantial success. So that's on the very much on the plus side. Probably the biggest minus is the failure of Congress to change the way in which it oversees the intelligence community.
There are well over 100 different sort of departments and area of security that are overseen by dozens of committees on Capitol Hill.
Right. So you have a dysfunctional congressional management of homeland security in the committee system you just described. Then the intelligence community used to have its budget hidden in the defense budget. So all of its appropriations were approved by the subcommittee that does defense appropriations. But now its budget is broken out. The top line of the intelligence budget is public. So the reason for hiding it in the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee is gone, but the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee won't give it up.
Another issue specifically on that day was the emergency radio system for first responders. It was a huge problem, especially for the New York Fire Department. And I want to play a clip of a moment of testimony before the 9/11 Commission in May of 2004. Former Mayor Rudy Giuliani was about to give his testimony when the audience interrupted him.
These people...
This was a very emotional meeting. In later on, your commission recommended dealing with the shortage of broadcast spectrum. Can you talk about the status of this recommendation today?
We still have a problem in that there's not enough broadcast spectrum available for emergency service agencies in a lot of cities. So the commission recommended that a chunk of unallocated broadcast spectrum, as known as the D block, be set aside for the emergency service agencies to use. But to actually use that part of the broadcast spectrum, you'd need to build a lot of very expensive infrastructure and equipment to use it. And the cities and the local governments just don't have the kind of money that would be needed to build that kind of equipment. Congress hasn't been able to come up with a solution yet.
Philip Zelikow, knowing what you know, do you feel any safer today?
I do feel safer today. I think, we're not safe and we shouldn't be complacent. One of the hard problems is, how do you talk about this? How do you tell people that we've made things better without inviting a sense of complacency and dulling the alertness that we need to maintain? But we need to adjust to a situation where we become more resilient as a society. We have reduced the scale of this problem through actions overseas and things we've done at home. We've made things safer. So now we need to adjust to a world in which our systems are going to be attacked from a lot of different places and sources. And the measure of a society in many ways is not whether or not you can prevent every single attack. It's how do you respond when you are attacked. I think that's one of the lessons that we're absorbing as a society as we look back on the last 10 years and think about what's the best and the worst that these crises brought out in us, is the gain in our maturity and our resilience as a community in how we cope with these problems and move on and go on with our lives.
Philip Zelikow is executive director of the 9/11 Commission. He spoke with us from New York. Philip Zelikow, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Audie.
Many people have traveled to Lower Manhattan to be part of today's remembrances. Only family and dignitaries have been allowed inside the event dedicating the National September 11 Memorial. But the streets are crowded with others who are also marking the day, 10 years ago, that America suffered its worst terrorist attack in history. NPR's Robert Smith is there, and he joins us now. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Audie.
So you've been talking to people on the streets of Manhattan this morning, and what are they telling you?
Well, you know, it's interesting because everyone has a connection to that day. And no matter how far away, I met people as far away as from London who have a spouse who's a firefighter. There's this connection that people don't often talk about. But when they're here, they want to tell you the story of what happened that day. They want to say where they were, why they feel like this day is a part of them. And so it's sort of remarkable. I've met people who have come down from upstate New York. They volunteered a day or two. And they just had to come back today. They feel compelled almost.
And how would you describe the mood at this point? The bulk of the ceremony in New York is actually over. Outside, what's going on?
I don't know. The mood is, it's serious, and it comes and goes. There's moments that are very emotional. Paul Simon just sang, and I got to say, That was an amazing moment here in the crowd. I mean, everybody really quiet down, and they really watched it. We have big screens here outside of Ground Zero where we can watch the ceremony and hear the names. And, you know, in fact, Adi, I'm here with someone who you can even talk to. His name is, I'll tell you who he is. His name is Hector Rivera, and he is a New York City firefighter. And he's down today. He's not working today. He's down just to be close to this ceremony. He worked at 9/11, he worked that day. He was at a Queens firehouse and came down to Ground Zero. Here, I'll give him to you now.
Okay.
Hi there, Mr. Rivera.
Hi. How you doing?
Thank you for speaking with us.
Fine.
Can you talk to us about what you remember of that day 10 years ago?
A lot of dust. Towers collapsed. They collapsed in front of us. We thought we were, finished. We were worried about everybody else. When it was all over, the two towers fell. Tower 7 fell later on, around 5, if I can recall. And it was really, really, surreal. Like, you just could not believe it. Even though you were in front of it, you could not believe it. You would hear the pass alarm from the firefighters, constantly. It was kind of hot. And we were just trying to do our, very, very best to get anyone alive out.
And where were you when you learned of the attacks? I know a lot of firefighters, even off-duty firefighters, went to help.
A lot of them did. A lot of them. And that is the spirit of the New York City Fire Department. And any fire department or any troops that go out there to fight for this great, country of us. We're very proud of the troops out there. I mean, we encourage them to, continue to fight for the U.S., and we thank them for all their efforts. But I was right there in front of the North Tower. I thought I was dead, and that was it. I thought that was, the end, but God is good, so.
And you were able to escape from that collapse.
Yeah, I was very lucky.
What are your thoughts on this now, 10 years later?
It's something that we as a nation cannot forget. We have to constantly remind ourselves, although time passes by and time heals all wounds, we have to be able that as a nation to just continue to remember this day. We also need to encourage the president and the decisions that he makes so that we can get this war over with and everybody can go back to normal. So
Mr. Rivera, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, and thank you for your service.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
And you know, it's interesting, Audie, there are not a lot of off-duty firefighters down here. A lot of them are up at a memorial up in northern Manhattan. There's a firefighters memorial there. They were not officially invited to the ceremony inside the Ground Zero site.
And that caused a fair bit of controversy this past week.
There was a little
week.
Bit of controversy, but at the same time, the ones I had talked to earlier this week said they wanted to be together. So if they weren't going to just come down here, they wanted to all be together up at the memorial.
That was NPR's Robert Smith in New York. Robert, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
The redevelopment of Lower Manhattan will continue well beyond this 10-year anniversary, and the process of rebuilding, of course, includes the grounds where the World Trade Towers stood is far from finished. Danielle Liebeskind is helping to create that new landscape. He was named master planner for the World Trade Center site after winning a 2002 competition aimed at attracting the world's best architects. We spoke with Danielle Liebeskind this past week. He explained his vision for rebuilding the World Trade Center site.
The idea was really a very, I think, profound one, which is how to bring memory, a memory of the day which changed the world and changed all of us, where lives were lost, and how to use it as a foundation, quite literally, for the resurgence of life in New York. It wasn't just a bunch of separate things to be connected by some abstract network, but create a civic space at the center of the site, which has, of course, the footprints, but has the waterfalls, which were important to me in terms of creating intimacy, bringing nature. But that memorial goes all the way down to bedrock. And that's, I think, the visceral emotional experience when you get close to where people perished. And, of course, I had to provide for 10 million square feet of density for office buildings.
Right. This is such a challenge. I mean, the World Trade Center complex, it's a sacred space, as you said, to families of 9/11 victims. But it's also, you know, the heart of commercial and transport for that area.
Exactly. But, you know, out of the 16 acres, about 8 of the acres are public space. You know, this is no longer a piece of real estate in New York. So really, where the Twin Towers stood is an emptiness, but a kind of somber memorial, which has the waterfalls, has a visitor's pavilion, which will take you down into the underground to that slurry wall and to the bedrock. And, of course, surrounding the space stand the 5 buildings, which will have the figure echo of the Torch of Liberty, because they will rise from Tower Number 1, and they will descend to a lower point to Tower Number 5. So it's a really symbolic composition of the buildings, a sort of guarding the memorial at its very center.
You're from New York. Can you tell us what this 16 acres means to you?
Well, it means to me the embodiment of what happened, of New York, of the values of America. This is about people who perished. This is about tragedy, but it's really about how to bring back life. You know, it's when I thought about it, I thought about my parents who were working in, you know, the sweatshops of New York. We were immigrants to New York. And I thought, you know, they will never be in the high-rise buildings. They will be not in the corporate headquarters, but they would be on the streets of New York. They'd be in the subways. We have to make that experience really vivid, interesting, inspiring, and of course, functionally adequate.
Did you ever question the idea of putting a skyscraper back in those blocks?
No, I never questioned it. You know, I questioned how high it should be, but at the same time, I never doubted that you couldn't change Lower Manhattan into a village. I was sure that the resurgence of that site needs to have the skyline restored and a new orientation to the memorial, and even the shifting of the buildings really towards Hudson River, where you can have the air and the light, and it's not a site oppressed by shadows and darkness.
There have been a good number of changes to your original vision, and of course there are a great many architects brought in at this point to design each of the buildings on the site. And I want to know how comfortable you are with how much it's strayed from your original vision.
It's very close, almost identical. It's like writing a score for an orchestra. You have to be able to give that score to different interpretations, because you have the families of the victims. You have the governor of New York and New Jersey. You have the path authorities. You have the investors and their own architects. You've got the MTA. And I'm just amazed how in a democracy where this site is, you know, in the sort of struggles of big forces, has really brought people together and created a consensus and allowed the site to move forward in exactly the way I proposed.
The site is also still far from finished, especially yes. The buildings that you were describing. The memorial will open to families tomorrow and the museum the next year.
Right.
But what do you hope for the site in the future?
Of course, it's a work in progress. We have to achieve many things. But I think bringing back the streets of New York back, that this is no longer, you know, some sort of podium of abstraction, which was associated with the Twin Towers, but it's a neighborhood connector. We have the sort of iconic tip of Manhattan, which is coming back to life. And, you know, what I'm really thrilled with is that there are twice the number of people living in Lower Manhattan today than were living there before 9/11. So really, the whole neighborhood is changing radically towards something which is very good and very interesting and very urban again.
Danielle Liebeskind is the master planner for the World Trade Center site. He spoke to us from our New York bureau. Danielle Liebeskind, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.